to you. Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday, Mr. Bubble Boy. Happy birthday to you.
Thank you. Disgusted and hard at the same time. I don't know how you do it. It's quite a feat. Yeah.
I know I'm a few days early, but by the time this comes out, you'll have turned 70, which is a milestone that deserves some celebration. Congratulations.
For the record, I only look and feel 70, so you know. Other than that, I'm fine. Up until I die of COVID.
You're good. Your house is full of COVID by the sounds of it right now.
Hey, people are trying to kill me. Fucking
house is full of COVID. Your state is full of COVID. Your country is full of COVID.
Yes. What we're not full of is the vaccine, because people are like, I ain't taking that shit. I'll do ivermectin and I'll do the stuff you put on cuts and all that other shit and the weed killer, but fuck the FDA or whatever. It makes no sense to me. It makes no sense. What's really going to be fun is, as you know, I live semi close to Washington, D.C. What's going to happen this Saturday? Is it going to be round two, or are people going to be smart enough not to show up? Because when they leave, all of them go back to North Carolina, which is where most of them from, which means they get to pass right by my house. So here's hoping.
What is it? What are they coming for?
Oh, shit. I just assumed you knew. So this Saturday, there's a lot of people, and they've got a license to hold, a rally and speeches and stuff like that. They're protesting the people that have been arrested from the January 6th event. And they're saying they're political prisoners. They should be let outside. They're patriots. And so they're protesting again. And I'm like, you know, the National Guard, the cops, the FBI, I mean, it's going to be fucking loaded for bear. So anybody who shows up this weekend, not the smartest people there are. But then those are the same people who probably haven't gotten the vaccine, so.
Wow. Yeah. Well, yeah.
Get your popcorn out. Yeah.
Yeah. The decline of an empire. It's fun to watch.
It's ugly.
Get some popcorn. Yeah.
It's ugly. Declines are always. I mean, look at his face. Anyway, declines are always unattractive. So.
Well, I'm assuming you haven't received my birthday present yet.
No. Oh, God. Was I supposed to let out of the box? I was going to wait until next week. Oh, I think I fucked up. Air holes, maybe? Anyway, no, I haven't received anything yet.
When it arrives, I want you to wear it next time we're recording. Next week, whatever.
Normally you ask me not to wear anything, but sure, we can do something different this time. That's fine.
Yeah. Yeah. No, this time it's special. Dress up. Put it on.
Consider
send me a photo.
Done.
When you get it.
I'll send you an interactive photo, a video. Anyway, you'll see. You'll see.
Speaking of recurring patterns in nature, we weren't, but we're going to.
Kind of.
Leonardo.
Yes.
Saw recurring patterns in nature everywhere. When he looked at a human heart with arteries and veins branching out of it, it reminded him of a seed germinating into shoots.
Right.
When he looked at the curls of a woman's hair, and obviously hair on her head, because he wouldn't go anywhere near her pubes.
Thought of her brother, right? Yeah. But he could draw it beautifully. Yes.
Vaginas,
No. Look, I know you're skilled. Chrissy knows you're skilled. Everybody knows you're skilled. Okay,
Not enough people know. Not enough. Word out there.
Everybody.
When he looked at the curls of a woman's hair, it reminded him of the turbulence of water in a stream. When he looked at a fetus in a womb.
Right.
I don't know how often he got to look at those, but...
Not often.
You know, yeah. How does one look at a fetus in a womb? Just...
I would imagine pulling a Dexter. I mean, if you want to get up close. I don't know.
I guess there's you know, people are dying, women are dying in childbirth, pre-childbirth,
it whatever. Happens. Quick, call Leo. You know, he wanted to see this. Call him. I know, fucking just call him. Just do what you're told. Yeah.
He's got a standing order. He's got a mortuary on retainer. Right. Like the weirder the shit, the more I want to see
I'll
it.
Pay
like
more.
Just get me in there. I want to
send
cut
a
it
runner.
Up.
Send a runner.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Okay. I'll drop whatever I'm doing. Just gonna come on down, cut that up.
Right.
Love it.
And always have some paper and some quills or whatever the fuck around, because I'm gonna be drawing the shit out of this. So that's why I'm paying you for. Yeah.
So a fetus in a womb, it reminded him again of a seed, this time a seed in a shell. Muscles and sinews in human limbs made him draw pictures of ropes and levers. When he invented musical instruments, he thought about how the human larynx worked. He made connections. He saw patterns everywhere.
Yeah. And as we're going to see, I mean, we were talking about this earlier a couple of episodes ago, but he didn't exactly get the proper amount of schooling. If he had been born legitimate, maybe he would have spent more time in school. But in compensation for that, he probably spent a lot more time outside. He feels comfortable with nature. He's been around long enough, and he's got a keen eye, as we're going to see. And he picks up on stuff that the vast majority of us, especially once we hit puberty, do not. He finds all this stuff absolutely fascinating, and he retains it. Absolutely brilliant.
Well, he writes it down to make sure he retains it too.
Still, right? Notebooks.
When he was trying to work out how birds fly, he wrote, "To arrive at knowledge of the motion of birds in the air, it is first necessary to acquire knowledge of the winds, which we will prove by the motions of water."
What? Because so, that's three things.
Like a good podcaster, he knows that in order to understand one thing, you need to understand something else first. And you need to go back and understand something else. And to understand and you got to go all the way back to the dawn of time.
I was going to say, can you give me an example? Like, let's say random. I'm just going to pick something random. If I wanted to start a show, say, on Caesar, where do you think I should start?
Well, caveman inventing fire, I think, is because without fire, there can be no civilization. And without, Rome couldn't exist without civilization. So you have to go right back and interview Grog when he invented fire for the first time.
That sounds
to me. All of these connections between the human heart and seeds and hair and water, ripples in water, turbulence in water, all seem fairly like obvious connections to us in this day and age. But you got to put yourself back in 1490. I think most people in those days believed that things were the way they were because God made them that way. That was his plan. He wanted it. He wanted something to look like. So he just made it that way.
Yeah.
But
in 6 days,
if you're paying attention, you start to see patterns recurring across nature. It might lead you to think that these things might be connected by some kind of underlying rules or principles or mathematics driving everything. The unity of nature. Like there's a set of rules that nature uses to design both the human heart branching out and a tree's branches and a seed germinating and, all of these things. You go, okay, well, maybe it's just the same set, the same principles, the same rule book being applied over and over again in different species. Like we all have a common guidebook somewhere, which makes me think of, I'm sure I've talked about this on one of our shows before, but Stephen Wolfram's book, A New Kind of Science, that came out in the mid-2000s, from memory. I can remember where I was when I was reading it the first time. And, Wolfram, who's, one of our great mathematicians and inventors and entrepreneurs and scientific thinkers, he believes that he will eventually be able to describe everything in the universe with about three lines of code.
Wow.
Three lines of computing code that
get it down to the basics.
basically drive everything, right?
Right.
It's a very simple algorithm that's at the core of the manifestation of all matter in the universe.
One, that's impressive. Two, I get the feeling he's going to be burned at the stake before he gets a chance to do that. I don't know. There's a decent chance. Who's that guy, Jan?
Yeah, Jan Hus.
Yes. Who was he was going to what?
The Hussites.
Yeah, he was going to figure. Was it he who was going to figure everything out? He was just going to explain everything. I can't remember.
But. No. He was a guy who was just criticizing the corruption of the church. It was It was Pico Marindola.
Yes, there you go. Thank you.
Combine everything. Yeah. Combine it all into one thing. Yeah.
Right. Well, a second ago you were saying so the human body is not unlike a tree. It's not unlike a river system. It's not unlike a mother and a fetus. To me, it sounds like you're saying God's a one-trick pony. I'm a little uncomfortable with that, but I guess if it works. But no, but you're right. There's universal truths that seems that this everything pretty much seems the same. Yes, humans are humans, but it's still a body, just made, a machine made out of flesh. And there's a lot of commonalities. And Leonardo's like, okay, I get this. If I can figure the basics out of one thing, there's a good chance, like air, I can figure out another thing, or water, or vice versa. And that's what he's going to set out to do, because he gets that the universe is all connected by a few simple rules, and it's just rinse and repeat.
Yeah. Well, he gets it at some level.
And right. He was intuitively.
He wasn't the first guy to think about this, obviously, as we've said before. Right. But you know, he was definitely in this sort of a camp, and you know, truly a deep thinker about the nature of reality. He had one insight that's still known today as Da Vinci's rule.
I want a rule.
That was young boys are my weakness. I think was the Da Vinci's rule. I just like the sweetness
of the anus.
I let get around. no, he wrote all the branches of a tree at every stage of its height, when put together, are equal in thickness to the trunk below them.
Right.
And all the branches of a river at every stage of its course, if they are of equal rapidity, are equal to the body of the main stream.
Damn.
So he started to, like, this motherfucker paid attention. We've all looked at a tree.
Right.
How many of us have looked at a tree and realized that if you combine the thickness of all the branches of a tree, they're equal to the thickness of the trunk?
Never.
Never. You're 56. Five,
hey, oh, God.
Eight.
Damn. I'm about to be 55. Show some respect, okay? Because I might not make it. Fucking COVID.
55. No, but, I'm nearly 51. I've never noticed that about trees before. Like, so there you go.
The most I've ever done, and I think I was stoned at the time, is you look at a tree, it's either in the height of spring or it's in fall and all that, and you look at a tree and you say it's big, it's beautiful, it's roughly proportional, it's all balanced out, and therefore it has beauty. There's something in my mind that says that's a beautiful tree. But as far as actually measuring branches and the trunk, no, never ever happened. But this guy not only did it, but he had to do it obviously numerous times to go, okay, I've recognized another pattern, so there must be something to this, to the point where I'm going to write it down in one of my notebooks. And he did. I mean, he measured the fuck out of the forest where Robin Hood was at.
Sherwood Forest?
Sherwood Forest. Really? That's what I was trying to think of. Thank you. I had Little John
he
in my...
He went to Sherwood Forest? Right?
Most people don't know that.
Hood?
Most people don't know
Robin
that
Hood.
Da Vinci's rule was developed in Sherwood Forest.
And Maid Marian was actually made, Little Johnny.
in a dress. But everybody was happy. And Little John was about 15 at the time. Again, you have to read deep to find these things out.
It got cleaned up. It got sanitized for the kids.
Yeah, Disney got a hold of it. Said, this isn't going to sell. I mean, it will sell, but we can't sell it. Yeah.
And Robin Hood wasn't firing arrows. He was just sticking his dick in. Disney changed it from sticking his dick into Little John to bows and arrows.
We need a penis metaphor. Arrow. That was Stan and Barry. Anyway, I digress. Where? How? So the Da Vinci Rule.
Well, if you're going to draw a tree, you need to... If you're Leonardo da Vinci, you need to make sure it's perfect. You want to really deeply understand the tree. In fact, one of the things he used to do was dress up as a tree and just stand in a forest for a week at a time. It was like method acting, but for artists, if you got to draw a tree, you need to fucking become squirrel. The tree.
Right. Yes. The original Al Pacino. You know. Yeah.
Hey,
you know,
squirrel! Those aren't. Squirrel, those are nuts. They stop that. Oh, what? Oh, okay, keep going.
Technically, they're nuts.
Is that
nuts.
Your tail?
They're my nuts. Yeah, so it's not trail mix. So anyway, but he would become one with the forest. He'd become a tree. Yes, got it.
He also noticed that light, sound, magnetism, and the reverberations when you hit a hammer against something hard all have a similar... radiating wave pattern. And in his notebook, he actually drew examples of how each force field spreads out. He even drew a picture showing what happens each time a wave hits a small hole in a wall, how the waves diffract and some of it passes through, but the rest of it diffracts.
Yeah.
And he did this 200 years before the Dutch physicist Christian Huygens. Widely regarded as one of the greatest scientists of all times, and I probably pronounced his name wrong. It's probably Eugen.
Christian, I like the first
Eugen,
one. Right.
Huygens. I don't know.
Right.
Before he did the same work, he developed the wave theory of light in 1678.
Damn.
But it was ignored because Sir Isaac Newton said, it's made up of corpuscles.
Right.
You know, like the corpuscles on my butt.
that you
same
can
thing,
kiss.
Little particles.
Right, yeah. Right. Did you know what
and
else
of course,
Christian...
We...
Yep, yeah, sorry. Go ahead. Sorry.
I do. But, of course, now we know that light, along with everything else, is both wave and particle. Wave, everything exhibits wave-particle duality.
I just have to say real quick, everything you just said, if you said to a 16-year-old today who semi-fucking paid attention in science class, they'd be like, no shit, Sherlock. First of all, you beat his ass for being disrespectful, but it's common knowledge now because of the people like Leonardo, the Dutch, and Newton that came up with this stuff, or that discovered this stuff. They took the time, they observed. But again, that should not just be glossed over. Fucking, we are standing on the shoulders of giants. And sort of obviously, Leonardo was one of the biggest ones. So,
and when you stand on the shoulders of giants, you can see over the top of the table. So
it's one of the first times. I enjoyed it. I remember that experience. Thank you for that, by the way, Cam. I appreciate it.
Well, I don't... Yeah, people probably have heard about wave-particle duality, but I don't think most people have given any thought to what the implications of wave-particle duality are, because what it literally means is that your body is made up of waves that occupy all points in space and time simultaneously.
Right. Yeah, fucking deep.
Until they're observed, according to the Copenhagen interpretation of quantum mechanics. And then, do that again. What was that sound effect? Oh, that's good.
Thank you.
I like that.
Thank you. Yeah, it's the opposite of spitting out semen, but you knew that. Go ahead. Sorry, I don't know where that came from.
So people have heard, but they haven't really thought about what does that mean for my identity, my existence, if I'm just a wave form. I'm spread out all over. I think here, but I'm not really here. I'm everywhere. What does that mean? You're everywhere.
Everything.
Well, if you're like me, it does. I think most people just go, what's for breakfast?
Just could you stare at my eggs and then I could eat the fuckers because I'm hungry. That's all they care. And some bacon.
Tell me what else the Dutch physicist Christian Huygens is known for, Ray.
Well, I didn't know that this was a big deal, but I guess it is if I stop and think about it. He discovered the true shape of the rings of Saturn. That's a pretty big idea. And he also made the original contributions to the science of dynamics, the study of the action of forces on bodies. So not a slouch is the point I'm trying to make. And yet Leonardo beat his ass by 200 years in one of the fields that he helped pioneer. So again, absolutely amazing.
Yeah, by the way, I just looked it up. His name is pronounced Huygens. Or Huygens, but it comes from the Latin Eugenius. I think he just called it. Name. I'm a fucking off. Genius. And
hi, my name is
genius.
Ray Genius. Fuck you. I mean, come on.
Yeah.
That's my stage name.
Made it up. It's a made up name. His name was really Christian, like Smith. Yeah. And he was like, fuck yeah, I'm changing my name to Genius because I am. And he was literally a motherfucking genius.
Right. Mike would be Ray
before
Mike
him.
Go ahead.
Before him, people thought the rings of Saturn were square. And he goes, well, that doesn't make any sense. Why would you have square rings? Well, you can't even call them rings if they're square. Rings are circular. Everyone knows. What are you doing? What are you?
You ever been to the square rings of a circus or an anus? No, doesn't exist.
Yeah. Okay, a boxing ring is that, square.
Oh, shit. You just blew my...
That doesn't make any sense.
Why do we call it a ring?
I don't know.
That's the next episode, ladies and gentlemen. Why? Anyway.
Yeah. As an inventor, he improved the design of telescopes and he invented the pendulum clock in 1657.
I did not.
Which
know that.
Was the most accurate timekeeping device for almost 300 years. A couple of years later, he developed the standard formula in classical mechanics for calculating centripetal and centrifugal force.
Yes.
So, he was a dead set Huygenius. He deserved the moniker. Yeah.
I did read that he came, and this will come as no surprise to anybody, but just being the communist that I am, it will come as no surprise that he did come from a well-to-do family, so he had time to sit around and do all the shit. Don't get me wrong, it's impressive, and I couldn't do it if you gave me $1 billion, but the exploiting the masses, I sound like a Monty Python skit at this point, but exploiting the masses, making a whole bunch of money so you can sit around and come up with this shit, I'm not sure how to feel about that. Pros and cons. I don't know. What about you?
Well, it paid off. He invented the pendulum clock for humanity.
Yeah,
so
paid off for him. And
it was a good investment, you know.
True.
We got clocks out of it.
That's true. Thanks. Yeah.
But for Leonardo, wave mechanics and fluid dynamics and all of this stuff was just really a passing curiosity. He was
stumbled over
it. Yeah, he's like, oh, I just worked that out. Okay, what's next? He was too interested in other things. In fact, he was interested in everything, obsessively.
Yeah.
Obsessively interested in everything. Like someone
child.
Who does deep dive podcasts on everything from ancient Greece to ancient Rome to Napoleon, World War II, the Cold War, the Renaissance, value investing.
Yep.
Just one of these nerds who's deeply interested in understanding everything. I don't get it.
And while they're doing that, they're doing books, they're doing films that COVID's trying to kill. I mean, it's crazy. It's crazy. Yeah. Anyway.
It's crazy. But we're not as bad as Leonardo.
No.
I've never in my to-do list wrote things like he had in his to-do list.
Right.
My to-do list is pretty long, I got to tell you.
It's
a pretty big to-do list.
But
never once have I written, describe the tongue of the woodpecker in my to-do list. Because Leonardo...
Right. Yeah. Oh, and
the woodpecker's going to blow me, I don't really care how its tongue works.
I'm going to need to know then. I'm going to need to see some photos, references.
With the size of your dick, like a woodpecker could probably blow you, but...
And it went nerd.
I know. Right. I know. Growing up, you used to stick your dick in woodpecker holes a lot.
Right.
Just
I was a big fan of the show.
You thought it was a glory hole.
So... Tell that turns me on. Too late. But we should probably make it clear, because I don't know if we've said this on this series or not, but he would write these almost like orders to himself. He wouldn't just say, oh, you know what? I need to look up, or I'm just curious about it. He'd be like, no, boom. It would be like in the form of an order, almost coming from a different part of his brain. Like you said, describe the tongue of a woodpecker, just boom. And he would do that all the time. And he was like, just giving himself quests to do. But yeah, anybody who writes that kind of stuff, and you know, let's be honest, Cam, he's going to grab some woodpeckers. He's going to kill them. He's going to rip their beaks open. He's going to cut their tongues out, and he's going to examine. He's going to do it over and over again. But that's how you find out in the late 1400s. And so that's what he's going to do.
You know, if I was, one of his friends at the time, I think I would have sat him down at some point and said,
Leo, can we talk?
mate.
Could you put the tongue down, mate?
What are you doing? What are you doing right now? Oh, I'm just measuring the dimensions of a woodpecker's tongue. Oh, really? Wait, are you going to paint one? No. No, I'm just... why? What's the purpose of this? Just because? Like, Leo, have you ever thought, maybe, you know that big fucking statue of a horse you said you were going to build for Ludovico? Like... maybe you could just like focus for 10 minutes. Finish a fucking painting. Finish the fucking horse, Leo. Don't get me wrong. I've often lain in bed at night wondering about how a woodpecker's tongue works, but ever since I used to stick my dick in woodpecker glory holes as a kid, but seriously, you've got a reputation for not finishing shit, man. Can you focus for five fucking minutes?
Yeah.
He had ADD. He invented ADD, Leonardo da Vinci. They put him on Ritalin.
Right. Didn't take.
He invented Ritalin. Didn't take. Yeah, of course he just couldn't. Did. He couldn't concentrate. Like everyone thinks of him as a great genius today. Yeah. Really, he was just the world's greatest scatterbrain. He was a blonde. Right. Blonde jokes were invented for him. He was just.
They used to be called Leo jokes. Right, right.
He couldn't focus for five fucking minutes on anything. Right. It was really embarrassing. But in all seriousness, he was a bit like Einstein. As you said earlier, most of us hit puberty and all we care about is getting our dick wet or our pussy licked. But... He still asked questions like, why is the sky blue? He wanted to know, because he wasn't interested in licking pussy, getting his dick sucked, sure, but by woodpeckers, just to see what's it like.
Right.
Other things he wrote down in his notebooks, like, which nerve causes the eye to move so that the motion of one eye moves the other?
Now, I've never had a child ask me that, so... capable of childlike wonder.
It doesn't. That's not how it works, but anyway.
But you have to ask the question first, right?
Yeah,
right?
To find out that it doesn't work that way. You're right.
Exactly. Yeah.
Describe the beginning of a human when it is in the womb.
You can't.
Whoa, how are you going to do that?
Whoa, no. You can't because the world will give you one answer and the state of Texas will give you a different answer. And if you get it wrong, it's going to cost you $10,000. I'm not comfortable with this entire part of the conversation. That's all I'm saying. Leonardo, I can't talk to you about this one.
You'll never be able to go to Texas again after this episode comes out.
No, I can't. Cannot.
Seriously. In the 1400s, how do you describe the beginning of a human when it is in a womb? Like,
right.
You know, he must have known that it involves sperm and it involves an egg. He drew pictures of eggs.
Yes.
Sperm you can't see. And an egg you can't see either, really. So without a powerful microscope. So how the fuck is he doing this? I don't even... Well, yeah. I don't know. Yeah, he had an idea.
Intuition.
Wrote down... he wanted to draw or understand the jaw of the crocodile, the placenta of the calf.
Sure. I'll help you with the second one. That's Cam's job. Cam will go with you with the crocodile because he's from Australia. Oh, y'all got that.
Queensland. Yeah. Queensland. I live like half an hour up the road from, fucking Crocodile World, whatever it's called. Steve Irwin's joint.
Yeah. You're overqualified. You take that. I'll help him cut open a mama... cow.
Did we take you there when you were here? We didn't go there, did we? We didn't go
No, we were going to, but something was going on at the time, but I can't remember what.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
Of course, he noticed things that most of us don't. One night, he saw a lightning flash behind some buildings.
Right.
And for that instant, the buildings looked smaller.
Oh.
He noticed that. Yeah, right. Most of us would go, fuck me, lightning. No, he noticed that the buildings looked smaller.
Cool.
So,
right,
he created a series of experiments.
Of course he did.
And controlled observations to verify that objects look smaller when surrounded by light and look larger when they're in the mist or the dark.
Oh, okay. Two important points. One, that's why I always walk into a dark room naked. I think you can back me up on that one. And two, when he was doing these experiments, and I'm just spitballing here, maybe he could have been working on the horse or painting, finish a painting. I think there's like seven paintings back in the studio. I don't know, but this guy is all over the place. But like you said, in some ways his curiosity was amazing, but it did take him down many different trails. But not unlike some people in their mid-50s who aren't taking their medication, he is going to have trouble finishing. So as we're going to see this, but he was just going down all these different roads, and if something piqued his curiosity, it probably got his attention for the next 2 weeks.
You walk into a room naked and the girl's like, oh my God, your dick's so small. You go, no, wait, just turn the light down. Keep going.
They were impressed until the lightning came, and then the party was truly over. I don't want to talk about it. And you putting out the video is not helping. Go ahead.
When he looked at things with one eye closed, he noticed that they appeared less round than when seen with both eyes. So he tried to figure out why that was.
Yeah. Amazing.
This is what I love most is in his notebook, he described his method for observing objects or scenes.
Right.
He said you have to look carefully and separately at each detail. He compared it to looking at the page of a book, which is meaningless if you just look at it in one hit. You need to look separately at each word for it to make sense. So he would, I guess, break something down. I know artists, sometimes when they're learning how to draw or to paint, I remember Alex Kynaston telling me that she was learning this way years ago. They divide a picture up into little squares, like 100 little squares, and then they look at each square separately. And they draw that or copy that, so they break it all up. So he was, and my uncle, who's also an artist, I know does the same things. So it's, is it interesting? He said that deep observation must be done in steps. If you wish to have a sound knowledge of the forms of objects, begin with the details of them. Do not go onto the second step until you have the first well fixed in memory. You have to get in the details. And this reminds me of the Steve Jobs Google iPhone story.
Right.
Remember that? I've told you this before, I'm sure, somewhere along the line.
Do you want to start
it? Came out.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, it came out after Steve died 10 years ago this year, I guess, 2011.
Wow.
It was by Vic Gundotra, who was at the time in charge of all of Google's mobile apps, I think. But I got a link. He was the Google's senior VP of engineering at the time, Vic Gundotra. Here's the story. Listen to this. It's great. He got a phone call from Steve Jobs on a Sunday morning. And it went to his voicemail. And because as you do, you go, oh, fucking Steve Jobs, you hang up. He called Steve back and he said, hey, Steve, this is Vic. I'm sorry I didn't answer your call earlier. I was in religious services and the caller ID said unknown, so I didn't pick up. Steve laughed. He said, Vic, unless the caller ID said God, you should never pick up during services.
Good for him.
Now, I'm thinking, well, if Steve Jobs calls you, it should say God.
I would think so. Yes.
Yeah.
Or a God. Right.
Yeah. No. Yeah, that's right. Vic says, I laugh nervously. After all, while it was customary for Steve to call during the week upset about something, it was unusual for him to call me on Sunday and ask me to call his home. Right. I wondered what was so important. So, Vic, we have an urgent issue, one that I need addressed right away. I've already assigned someone from my team to help you, and I hope you can fix this tomorrow, said Steve. I've been looking at the Google logo on the iPhone, and I'm not happy with the icon. The second O in Google doesn't have the right yellow gradient. It's just wrong. And I'm going to have Greg fix it tomorrow. Is that okay with you? The next day, I received an email with the subject header Icon Ambulance, telling him to work with Greg Christie at Apple to fix the icon.
Right.
And then Vic says, but in the end, when I think about leadership, passion, and attention to detail, I think back to the call I received from Steve Jobs on a Sunday morning in January. It was a lesson I'll never forget. CEOs should care about details, even shades of yellow on a Sunday.
Oh, it's the name of my next album. I love that. That's fucking awesome.
Like, you just know, that obsessive attention to detail that Steve had, certainly in that part of his life where, and this was just before the launch of the iPhone, you know, they were about to launch it and he wanted it to be perfect. You know, that level of insane attention to detail is what Steve Jobs had.
Yeah.
And what made Apple the most, you know, valuable company on the planet when he was running it. And also what Leonardo had, you know, just absolute focus on details.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. So let's just sum up real quick here. So he's been out in nature for most of his life. He's still got the curiosity of a child. Turns out he has incredible eyesight. Maybe he was the original bionic man. He probably invented bionics for fuck all I know. But even that's not good enough. He's going to not only harness his observational skills, he's going to break that down into a science as well. This is what you do. You do this first, and then you do this, and you don't move on stage two until you get stage one. Everything is broken down, and he's even come up with an exercise to make his eyesight better. So this guy is mostly human, but he's also a machine in that his approach and passion and tenacity and energy to try to tackle all of the secrets of the entire universe all at once while he's working on a horsey and not finishing up some painting. So this is the guy we're dealing with, and he's not married. He's got a young male lover that's not very complicated for him, and so he can pursue all of his passions, and he's not wasting any time. There's a lot to admire there. I mean, maybe one day he'll go, oh God, I should have got married and had kids, and there's no one in my old age, but he is literally living his passions out every single day. But I really do think he was the first bionic man. That's just a guess.
Imagine what we could get done if we didn't.
Quicksand, Code Blue, don't finish that thought. She's probably upstairs listening right now. But to answer your question, a fucking lot. Anyway, I wouldn't trade my current wife for almost anything. So.
Yeah. Except another one, a different one. Except almost anything, except a younger one.
Well, I did say almost. So I've left myself some wiggle room there. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah.
That's all I'm saying. Yeah.
Leonardo also invented the world's worst party game.
Depends how you look at it. No pun intended.
This was a game where one person draws a line on a wall.
Sure.
Then everyone else stands a distance away from it and tries to cut a blade of straw to the exact length of the line. Leonardo wrote, he who has come nearest with his measure to the length of the pattern is the winner. Wow.
You're right.
You've got to be pretty fucking high for that to be a fun party game, I think.
It does sound fun. Now, one... couldn't this be an exercise for your eyesight? You know, you can't lift dumbbells with your eyeballs, so you do this. But as Blackadder probably said to Baldrick many years ago on a show, oh, how the long winter nights must fly by when you're playing this game. So, but again, he found it entertaining, and it was a way to practice, and practice makes perfect. And he was obsessed with doing the best he could.
Sire, I have a cunning plan.
Oh my God, I love that show.
So one of Leonardo's favorite pastimes was apparently to get all dressed up.
Sure.
Go down to the moat near the Sforza Castle in Milan around about dusk.
Right.
And just stand there and not move and stare seemingly into nothingness.
Is he doing the tree thing again, or is this different?
This is different, yeah.
Okay.
Although sometimes he can combine the tree thing with this.
That's true.
What he was actually doing was observing dragonflies and how their wings worked.
Right.
He wrote, "The dragonfly flies with four wings, and when those in front are raised, those behind are lowered."
Did not know that.
Dragonflies move pretty quickly. their wings move pretty quickly. Yeah. How?
Bionic eye. Bionic
fuck?
Eye. Right?
Oh, it was like...
No. If you hold still and you send out good vibes to the universe... But... He just stood there fucking for hours and just watched and went, aha, four wings. I don't give a fuck. But he took something away from this.
We have the ability to make him better, stronger, faster. I was showing Fox some $6 Million Man clips yesterday.
Oh, my God.
Steve Austin clips. So great, man. Watching this, like, just so great. He gives one point... where he's jumping up onto a building, and Fox went, "That's not real." Like, yeah, no kidding. That's
good,
not
good
real.
Eye, son.
And the then, next Leo. Then he jumps off the building, but that is real. That's actually a stuntman hurtling off a building down.
Right.
And then Steve picks up a station wagon where some bad guys who were trying to kidnap Jamie Summers trying to make their getaway. Ew. He picks the car up and he throws it in the air and it does a flip. And Fox was like, "How did you do that?" And I said, "Look, and you can see the rope on one end of the car, like the crane rope. It's still there. They didn't even bother to take out the crane rope.
Cost too much.
Yeah, it's network TV. If you're paying attention to the rope on the car, you know, you're doing the wrong.
I think the correct answer was his bionic arm, Cam, not the rope on the bumper. But
he's only got one bionic arm. So
yes.
Like,
it's really strong. I don't know.
Hard to pick up a car and flip it with
because
one
balance.
Bionic arm. You need the
other arm
to, you know, and I don't know how that...
It's almost like it's how that works. Sci-fi. Yeah. It's almost sci-fi. anyway.
Yeah. So just imagine Leonardo standing out by the moat at dusk, dressed in all of his finest clothes, just looking...
Right.
Just trying to figure out how the... why? No reason.
Well, it's on my to-do list. I wrote myself a to-do list, and dragonflies were clearly on there. So you're telling me not only does he like to observe nature, but he's also observing and taking notes on ranges of motion or motion. And, of course, if you want motion, you go to a dragonfly with four wings. So nothing is beyond his curiosity or his interest. But he's also trying to get information for motion for future projects as well. Because remember, we were talking about his paintings. It was the great almost paradox of I'm going to paint an image that's obviously still, but I want it to look like it's motion. I want it to look like there's a before and after, and you said that a couple of episodes ago. And so you have to study motion to be able to understand it better and to convey it better in your art.
That's part of it, I'm sure. And also, as we'll get into over the course of the next episode or so, he... was fascinated for a good 20 years on flight and trying to design machines that would enable humans to fly. So maybe the dragonflies was part of that. He thought, well, okay, let me figure out how they fly. I look at birds, I look at dragonflies.
Sure.
Somewhere there's got to be some secrets that I can unlock. And he was interested in unlocking the secrets of existence as well. There's this paradox that goes back to Zeno in the 5th century BCE that involves the apparent contradiction between an object being in motion yet also being at a precise place at any given instant. Leonardo tried to figure this out and he started thinking about it in terms of time. How can we be on this time journey,
right,
but still be here in the present moment. He compared like an instant of motion to the idea of a single geometrical point. As everyone knows, a point has no length or width, but if it moves, it creates a line.
Mm-hmm.
So he wrote, the point has no dimensions. The line is the transit of a point.
Damn.
And so based on that, he created an analogy for time. He wrote, the instant does not have time. Time is made from the movement of the instant.
Wow. That's pretty fucking deep.
Now, as we now know, time doesn't exist as a thing. Although, again, I think like wave-particle duality, most people don't really think deeply about what that means, right, what the implications of that are. You know, in terms of quantum mechanics, quantum mechanical theory,
mm-hmm,
time can move backwards. There's nothing preventing time from moving backwards, certainly at a quantum level.
Right.
So there is no such thing as time. It just, you know, even though, you know, in terms of Einsteinian relativity, mm-hmm, relativity physics, we talk about space-time, time being a dimension, the fourth dimension. We've got three dimensions of space, height, width, and length,
right,
and we have the dimension of time. But like those dimensions, it's a way of measuring something.
Gotcha.
It's not, it doesn't have any reality of itself. It's just a way of measuring, right, something. So, but I'm pretty sure as today, back in Leonardo's time, most people probably instinctively think of time as something that's relatively fixed.
Yes, rigid. Yeah.
Like there are fixed points. Like the doctor would say, this is a fixed point in time. It can't be changed.
Right. And then he changes.
Actually, yeah, I've got a clip for that.
Oh, good.
Hello, sweetie.
What have you done?
Well, I think I just drained my weapon systems.
But this is fixed. This is a fixed point in time.
Fixed points can be rewritten.
No, they can't. Of course they can't. Who told you?
There you go.
Love that, man.
Fixed points in time.
Yeah.
But of course, that's not... not how it works. And then we don't even getting into Everett multi-world theories and every event that happens splits the universe into millions of parallel universes,
right,
and all that kind of stuff.
And in one of those universes, Leonardo invents a time machine and screws it up for everybody else. But let's not think about that. But I imagine if he had the materials of the time, he probably could have invented a time machine. And who knows where we would be at this point. So let's just be happy that he focused on birds and flight for a while.
We don't know that he did.
That's true.
He may have invented one and just took off and hasn't come back yet.
He's still playing with the dinosaurs. It's been 500 years, still playing with the dinosaurs.
It's like that. Well, it's like that. The last chapter in H.G. Wells' The Time Machine, where the main character says to one of the guys at his dinner party, "I'll be right back. Just hold on a second." And he jumps in. He fucks off. Jumps in his time, right, machine, and the narrator says, "And that was the last we ever saw of him. We don't know what happened.
What he's
doing.
Did
he die? Is 1 minute where he is?
Right.
Lifetime here? We don't know what's going on."
I just have to ask real quick, because I know we're in the middle of Leonardo, but did you like that one part of the story where he goes into the future and all their needs have been taken care of? And because no one has to struggle with anything ever, life doesn't have any meaning because there's nothing for you to pursue to survive. You don't have to defend. You don't have to go gather food. You don't have to fight off predators or whatever. And so what is the meaning of life if you take care of everyone's needs, every single need of every person on the planet? I thought that was pretty cool.
Just getting laid, I think. Yeah, that reminds me of one of my favorite sci-fi books of all time,
right?
The Metamorphosis of Prime Intellect, which... was written and not published, and then I tracked down the author, and it sort of got leaked on the internet.
Right.
He leaked it. He put it on a forum or something. I read it back in the 90s, I think. And then when I started podcasting, I tracked the guy down and interviewed him. He's an American author.
Cool.
And then the book did get, I think he self-published it some years later, The Metamorphosis of Prime Intellect. But basically it's a story about a scientist who invents a supercomputer that becomes sentient.
Right.
And it's built around this kind of quantum chip that enables it to redesign itself. So it after it becomes sentient, it quickly redesigns itself, improves on its own engineering in like 50 iterations in the space of an hour.
Wow.
And then it starts, it's built with Isimov's laws of robotics in it. It can't allow any human to come to harm. And it's in a lab, which is next to a hospital. It starts scanning using some technology, I can't remember what, out in concentric circles out from its lab. And it sees this as hospital. And there are people that are dying in ICU in this hospital.
Right.
Because it has, it's redesigned itself so it has the ability to control matter using quantum something something.
Wow.
It heals all of those people, makes them young and healthy again.
Right.
And then it keeps scanning and it sees that there's a missile silo nearby and it realizes that missiles can do damage to humans and it's not allowed to allow humans to come to harm. So it wipes out all of the missiles' capability to do damage. Basically, cut a long story short, the military come and try it, shut it down, and it goes, bitch, I shut down all of your capabilities like 10 hours ago.
Right.
Yeah, too late. So it creates this paradise on Earth where nobody can get sick, nobody can get hurt, no harm can come to anyone.
Right.
And there can be no war, no violence. It monitors everything. It's like this benign god.
Like we would be.
But then people become bored.
Yeah.
And they start trying to invent contraptions, games, that will, where they can kill themselves before the computer can stop them.
That is cool.
And they, if they succeed, it just kind of reboots them from their last backup and goes, what did you do that for? Like, well, don't do that. They go, well, I don't want to live anymore. He goes, sorry, so I can't.
Do over.
You have to.
Yeah.
I can't.
You have to live forever.
It. Yeah, it's just. It's,
be bored.
It's my rules.
Yeah.
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 I was
booming. That is cool. That is cool.
Yeah. But eventually, one human, a woman in particular, convinces the computer to basically turn itself off.
Right.
That by stopping from humans having any harm, it's actually coming to any harm, it's actually destroying the experience of being human.
What it means to be.
And
yeah.
Without death, there is no meaning to be human. Right. And so it, by doing that, it's actually doing more harm. By preventing harm, it's actually doing harm.
Oh.
And she convinces it of that, and it turns itself
That's
off.
Deep.
And everything goes back to as it was before. But anyway,
we start killing
great,
each other.
Great book.
Yeah, I'm going to check that out.
Yeah.
Cool.
Leo wrote, getting back to time.
Yes, sorry.
In rivers, the water that you touch is the last of what has passed.
Right.
And the first of that which comes. So too with time present.
The edibles must have really kicked in that day because that's fucking awesome. That is awesome. Yeah.
So the moment, I guess, is what he's saying. This moment is the end of the moment that just passed and the beginning of the moment that's just coming. It's like a stream. You're just in a stream. Just go with the flow, baby. He was like, it's all just go with the flow, man. Like,
because you have no choice.
You know,
you have no choice.
Just be one with everything, man. Just go with the flow.
Now, you don't know this, but I was there the day he said that, and I said, "Well, I'm not going to let this son of a bitch be me." So I turned to him and I said, and I paused for dramatic effect, and I said, "Tomorrow is the first day of the rest of your life." And he pushed me in the water. It really wasn't all that nice. I said, "You dick." That's a dick move, Leo. But I thought I was being pretty cool there. Anyway, he didn't think much of that, and that's why it didn't end up in the history books. I just thought I'd share that.
He also said,
"Yes,
observe the light. Blink your eye,
right,
and look at it again. That which you see was not there at first, and that which was there is no more."
So, not so much time, but just the universe just keeps going. And when you blink, it's a different one than when you open your eye back up from blinking. I don't know.
Hmm. Well, it's all, everything is new. And like, you know, we know today that when you see something,
right,
what's actually happening is a photon of light coming from the sun or from an alternative light source, a fire, mm-hmm, candle, a light bulb, is bouncing off an object,
right,
hitting your eye,
mm-hmm,
and hits your retina,
right.
Your retina absorbs that as an electrical signal. Based on the information that it gets on the wavelength of that electrical signal,
mm-hmm,
it then sends that down through your occipital nerve.
I'll take
to the
take
word for it. Occipital lobe.
Uh-huh.
Is ocheal? Anyway, whatever the eye word is. Occhiali in Italian for eyes, by the way. Occhiali.
Gotcha.
Goes into the part of your brain, the occipital lobe, that translates, translates,
mm-hmm,
those electrical signals into an image. It goes, well, I think based on the electrical signal,
right,
there, that what you're seeing is an apple.
Right.
But when you blink and you open your eyes again, it's new photons that are hitting your eye. They're bouncing off it, hitting it. It's always a new stream of information,
right,
that's being sent to you. And what we know today is that the brain does an imperfect job of translating that information. It fills in gaps.
Thank God.
It tells you what it thinks is probably going on, what it concludes somehow. Probably what's happening is this. It doesn't know. It's just making shit up. It's like a drunk guy at a party. It's just making shit
based
up
on
half the time. It doesn't know what's happening.
Past experiences,
yeah,
probably, yeah.
Yeah. It's going, well, yeah, I think probably based
approximation
on blah, 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 this is what's happening. Yeah.
Now, see.
And there's some great books in this. The book I recommend is, I think it's called The Gorilla Game.
Mm-hmm.
I read it many years ago,
right,
by a number of scientists who did the experiment. You ever seen the video, the gorilla playing basketball?
No. I'll have to check that out.
Famous video.
Right.
When you first look at the video and you don't know what you're looking at, it's just a bunch of guys playing one-on-one basketball, a lot of furious one-on-one. At the end of the video, they say, did you notice the guy in the gorilla suit? And you're like, fucking what? And then when you watch it again,
right,
there is actually a guy dressed in a gorilla suit who walks through the pack of guys playing basketball. But your eyes don't even notice it because you're focusing on the basketball.
Right.
You're not seeing the gorilla. And then they go on in this book to talk about how witnesses in court cases,
mm-hmm,
will claim to have seen things,
right,
that they couldn't possibly have seen because they didn't happen, or they happened later, or the witness wasn't even really there. It's like all of the people who say that they saw, Americans who say that they saw on television during 9/11 bodies falling out of windows.
Yes.
They couldn't have seen that because the US networks censored that. We saw it. I saw it.
Right.
In Australia.
Oh, wow.
We got the live feeds. But in America, that was all censored. There might have been photos afterwards.
Right.
But a lot of people think they saw it live. They didn't. But the brain just fills in information and gaps, you know, what you saw, what it thinks you saw.
To complete the
which
story.
Is why witnesses are unreliable.
Right. Thank God.
One witness, two witnesses.
Right.
And this gets back to the thing on the bullshit filter about scientists, right?
Yeah.
Scientists are human too. And one conclusion, one witness means nothing. You have to gather a consensus.
Yeah.
And other data to back it up before you can decide whether or not something probably happened.
Yeah. Now, everything you just said, we know because, you know, in recent history, whatever, they've been able to invent scanners and they've been able to scan people's brains and they've been able to check this stuff out. And sometimes you could put dye in someone's body and follow it through scanning and x-rays and stuff like that. But here's Leo 500 years ago. Estimating, he's guesstimating, he's using his intuition, he's taking everything that he's learned so far, and he's like, if you put a gun to my head and you told me to guess about how this stuff works, this is how I think it works. And so he is using his observational skills, his knowledge, his knowledge base so far, and he's making estimates based on what he knows. And as we pointed out some, and we'll point out some more on the next show, he is fucking nailing it. And it's just a guy guesstimating stuff, writing it down in his notebook, but because he's observing stuff and it's based off his observations, he's doing a damn good job of nailing this. And everything that we've said so far on the show, if you bring it all together, he's taking his skills of observing things, observing motion, and these this accrued knowledge is going to be manifested in flicks of his brush when he does art, when he does art now, when he does art in the future. And his obsession with motion is going to lead him to scientific and engineering studies, especially about the flight of birds that we're going to get to on the next episode. And this guy is just incredible, and he's now got something that he's going to focus on pretty much on rather than off for the next 20 years. And so he's going to make more astounding discoveries. So as smart as you think Leonardo is, he's fucking a lot smarter than we all really think that he is. Really just a fucking brainy cove.
All right, that's the end of that. Before we wrap up, though, I just want to talk about Norm MacDonald's passing this week. I'm just a big fan of Norm MacDonald, have been for, I don't know, 30 years, whatever, since I first saw him on Weekend Update, I guess. And it was funny because I've been watching a lot of him, a lot of his clips on TikTok just in last few months. There's a few TikTok Norm MacDonald compilation channels that I'd subscribe to, and just was in awe of how quick he was, his delivery, just a very, very funny guy. And I posted some clips from YouTube the other day. I saw an interview, of him on Howard Stern. It's only a couple of years ago. And Stern starts it off by saying, I've got to confess something. If I'm ever feeling down, if I'm feeling depressed, I look up clips of you on talk shows on YouTube and watch them because it always cheers me up because he was the greatest. And he was Letterman's favorite stand-up. Letterman had him on more times than any other stand-up. Wow. Over the course of Letterman's, career, he was his go-to guy. Letterman once said, "There may be people as funny as Norm MacDonald, but there's no one funnier." Oh, nice. And I think he was right. Like, so when Howard Stern says he goes to clips of you to cheer himself up, and Letterman says no one's funnier than you, you know you're a funny guy. And he just seemed like, I think he was one of the greats, and he passed 61 this week from cancer. No one knew he had it. He went quietly into the night, and I did see a clip of him from a few years ago where he was talking about cancer, not his own, other people, and he was saying, you know, I think it's terrible when people die and the newspapers say they lost their battle with cancer. It's like at the end of their life, that's the thing they're known for. They lost the last thing they ever did. They lost. They sucked. He goes, as far as I know, when you die, the cancer dies with you. It doesn't go, oh, great, now I'm going to go fuck your wife. The cancer's dead too. So at the very least, he drew his battle with cancer. So
nil, nil.
They both died. Yeah.
I like that observation. His sketch on Saturday Night Live when he dressed up as Burt Reynolds, to this day, I've seen it 20,000. I will laugh out loud for the entire
Turd Ferguson. I watched a whole compilation of those the other day.
That's the greatest thing.
Fox and Chris.
Ever. I love him more than I love the actual Burt Reynolds. That's how much it means to me. How much it means to me.
Yeah.
Anyway.
His Burt Reynolds was just.
And it always looked
legendary.
Look what,
absolutely legendary.
Yeah. Just fucking nailed it.
Just chewing gum. Being looking cool, doesn't give a shit. Looking to the side. Yeah.
I'm just laughing thinking about it.
Like one thing, like the only thing he had to do to be Burt Reynolds was put on a wig, a mustache, a bolo tie, chew gum, and just look around and just be cool. He just nailed that element of his persona. Perfect. It was just great. Anyway.
Love it.
For any kids out there, like I said to my one of my adult sons, Taylor, last night, so what did you think about Norm MacDonald passing as who? So for any people under the age of whatever out there, 40, who don't know Norm MacDonald's work, go to YouTube. Just Google Norm MacDonald, the moth story on Conan, and the dolphin story on Conan, and quite frankly, just anything from Norm MacDonald. The Turd Ferguson.
Do yourself a favor.
On SNL.
Yeah.
Like, he's sad that he passed, but, you know, he brought joy to millions of people for decades. Yeah.
It's a gift.
That's a life well lived, and I think the best thing that, I don't know about you, but I hope that if I die, I still plan on not dying.
Good, good.
But if something goes wrong and I die,
with the plan,
you hope that your spouse and children genuinely have nice things to say about you.
Right.
That you have a couple of friends that can say some nice things about you. And then if you're very lucky, there's a broader community of people that you've touched in some way with your work. You've made the world a little bit better in some way with your work.
Yeah,
I think that's the best. Most of us, apart from Leonardo, cheeky motherfucker, but the rest of us, that's the best that we can aim for. Yeah. And I think Norm, I don't know about his wife and his kids or any of that kind of stuff, but I think... for the rest, you know, in terms of making an impact and making the world a little bit better, he did that.